everybody. You're listening to You, Me, Them, Everybody. My name is Brandon Weatherby, and I'm with my good friend Brent Cato, who I have... Say hello, please.
Hello.
Wonderful. I have known this gentleman for a few years, like 5, 6, 7, something like that. And I met him through a radio station at a college I was attending and you were attending.
That is correct.
You were there as a graduate student, is that correct?
That is right.
And I was a dumb undergrad, and I still am a dumb undergrad, in a way. And you are still in radio right now.
I am still in radio. I'm working for Chicago's very well-known WLUW, and just doing a radio show there every Friday, 6 to 8 a.m.
Why? Why did you decide to keep doing radio? It's 6 in the morning, and you don't live in Rogers Park, which is where the station is.
I don't.
It takes you almost like an hour to get there, I'm guessing.
Well, I drive, and I am not saying this to brag, but I also ride my motorcycle sometimes. first of all, if you like radio, it's 6 to 8 a.m. It's drive time.
It's drive time, but it's 6 a.m. And how many, let's be honest here, how many drive time listeners are giant indie rock fans?
I don't know.
Or have they grown up and they have corporate jobs now and they're up that early?
I'm not sure how many people on the north side of Chicago that are commuting via car are actually listening to WLUW, but in their homes as they're getting ready in the morning.
Okay.
Drive time is a generic term. I don't know. You could call it prime time, or
everyone knows it's the key. It's why Howard Stern gets paid a lot of money.
Exactly.
Okay, so what's the goal with LUW? Like, why did you join up? Because there's a lot of controversy around LUW in the past few years. For those that don't know, I'll just do a brief overview, if that's okay with you.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Tell me if I'm wrong. Chime in at any moment. LUW was really popular because it's community-based radio, similar to NPR. And LUW was having some financial strains, what, in the late 90s, early aughts, and NPR stepped in.
Early aughts.
NPR stepped in and kind of, not took it over, but lent a helping hand. And the because of that, the station has gotten on its feet again. And now Loyola is stepping in and say, we're going to use this more as a teaching tool, and we're going to have students run the radio station, unlike how LUW was run, which is by the community. Is that correct? Somewhat
correct. I think the reason that I would say that it's not correct is because a lot of what you said is not actually come to fruition or even been solidified yet, that's actually what is going to happen. I mean,
if
I was a betting man, that's what I'd say, that is what's going to happen.
But so where are they now?
It's still pretty much the same as WLUW ever was.
So it's still community-run radio.
Yeah, except that 75% of the people quit.
And those 75% of the people have formed CHIRP. Am I correct here?
Right.
Which is the Chicago Independent Radio Project. And the purpose of CHIRP, if I'm right, and I think I'm like 70% right here, is to open up the airwaves and allow some more low-frequency stations in city limits.
Right.
And Chicago Independent Radio Project will have, in theory, one of those once it opens up.
Right, if they ever open up.
Yeah, I only know any of this because I was in radio with you.
Right.
And we were at a station that was AM. Right. But the way AM works is there are boxes in the ground. That's their transmitters, essentially. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know where some of the boxes were, and the other one was burnt out. So there was like literally 30 yards on campus where you could hear the radio station.
Right.
And the rest of it was just online. Right. But we still had to follow FCC regulations. F-words, community-based stuff, all that. So, how is your radio show now? What's the difference between working at a community-based radio station and a college radio station that's predominantly online?
Well, I don't know if there is much difference. I mean, I feel a little more like I need to be a little more aware of like a listenership. I've never been told how many people I am listening to, or how many people are listening. But, you know, when we were doing radio at WRDP,
yeah, those are the
callers. We could tell how many listeners we had, and I don't know, but
somewhat there was a counter, but it only went up to X amount.
Oh, okay.
But there was still more.
Well, it was usually for my show under
200. Yeah.
So anyway, and I don't know what WLUW's is, but it certainly has the potential to
be,
with the online, especially in their popularity, to be, I mean, it's never going to be a million, but there are potentially millions of listeners.
Especially with the help of iTunes and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, I'd agree with you completely. What do you usually play on your show? Do you have the constraints of, of a program director because it's so early and you have to play the top five or the top 20 you guys are pushing, or no?
No, there's just a list every week of heavy rotation, light rotation stuff, but you're talking about probably 40 CDs that mm-hmm. I can choose from that I would only have to play like four or five of.
And you don't have to
hours.
Play like the X cuts. You could play any of the cuts.
You can play any of the cuts.
That's good.
So yeah, it's very open and very, so you're not, even with those 40 CDs, you know, 10 songs per CD, mm-hmm. you're not going to hear the same stuff as people are always going to be playing different.
So are you still in radio because you want to be a DJ, or are you still in radio because you just enjoy it and it's fun? Because we were talking earlier, and I think your goal, to loosely, is to be a writer. And you are a writer.
Right.
So why are you in radio?
My goal is to be a writer, but I also have a desire just to be a personality.
Okay.
And I...
Flesh that out, please, because personality could mean anything. Personality...
I want to be like Paris Hilton of Chicago.
You're a liar.
I am a liar. I want to be... I'm into all arts, and as we were talking about beforehand, I've worked writing, radio, movies. I've done photography.
Do you want to talk about
my website?
Yeah, do you want to talk about the site, or do you want to talk about the film right now? It's your call.
Let's talk about the film first.
Okay, the film. You have written a movie. You shot it over last winter, fall, spring. I remember you guys working on this for a while.
It was actually the summer of 07, so it's
summer
been
of
a
07.
While.
It's been a while. But you wrote and directed a film, mm-hmm. and I think your wife stars in it.
She's one of the stars.
A lot of the Second City members are in it. Am I correct here?
Every actor in the film was from Second City,
okay.
except for maybe one who was a family member.
Okay, well, that's very nice of you to do that.
He's also an actor, though.
Oh, okay.
So he just is not from Chicago, so not Second City tied.
What made you want to write and direct a film?
Orlando, Florida.
Orlando, Florida.
We were in Orlando, and...
Who's we?
My wife and I, okay. and my family, but mainly my wife and I is important to this story. In Orlando in the winter of 06, around Christmas time, and Orlando is a pretty boring, I mean, it's not boring because there's a lot to do, but if you're like two urban artsy city people like we tend to be, it's kind of a boring place. Anyway, we were going to all these like Disneylands and medieval times, and she got to talking about how like those people are actually probably some of them like Ivy League trained actors that are doing these completely ridiculous, and if you're an actor, somewhat degrading work. So we were thinking about how funny it'd be to do a mockumentary about people in Orlando working in these various, you know, skits and restaurants and stuff. So we started talking about that, and then we realized that was way out of our constraints to do something like that down there. So we kind of hashed it out to something that we could do in Chicago. So we decided that we'd kind of mockument the improv scene in mm-hmm. Chicago.
How far are you into the film? Because you said you started shooting it, like 18 months ago, roughly?
I would seriously say we're like 95% done.
You're 95% done. Walk me through the process here. So you start writing the film. The film is conceived in the winter of 06, 07. When do you start putting words on paper?
In February of 07, we both really sat down for like a month, very hardcore, and wrote the film.
Okay.
Then we cast.
So you co-wrote the film?
Yeah.
Okay.
We co-wrote the film. I mean, we both had ideas. We both put in, we definitely, it was a co-written project. It was our idea, but since I champion myself as more of the writer, I like to claim more of the writer.
Got it.
And she's already gets to be like one of the big stars.
She's in the film, and you're behind the scenes. Okay.
So then after we got it written, more than a rough draft, but again, I'll just use percentage, like about 75% done. We went ahead and cast the film.
Okay.
And got all of our actors. And then we gave them the script and through some rehearsal processes let them hash out some of the dialogue.
When is this timeline?
That would have been from like March through May.
So for 2 months of casting and more fleshing out the script?
I mean, the casting was done quickly. The fleshing out the script was like 2 months.
Did you cast it or did you have somebody come in and do it?
No, we casted it.
Was that easier? Are you glad you did that? Would have been better to have somebody else?
No, I'm glad that we did.
You're glad that you had your hand in that. Okay.
Yeah, because we had the actors that we wanted and they fit the characters that we wanted them to.
You don't have to answer this question, of course. Since you knew these people, how much did it cost to have them be in your film? Was it mostly volunteer? Is it mostly just like at the back end of it? Could someone cast a film and not have to worry about money in terms of the casting aspect of it?
Well, we did.
You worried about it or what?
No, we didn't have to pay any money.
That's wonderful. So these people are they're there because they want to be there because they both respect you and enjoy the work they're doing.
Right.
Do you think that helped in the long run? Were they willing to put in longer days because they weren't just there for a check?
I think it helped a lot with most of them. I think there was I don't think that there were people that really thought that they were going to get paid, so they put in less, but they put in less because it was just like other things came up for them that were more important, maybe paid, maybe not, but just their dedication waned, whereas some other people, as the project went on, they became as very intricate, you know, almost as intricate as what we were doing, so.
Okay. So when did you start shooting this? We're at roughly May 07 right now.
Right, we're at May 07.
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay. We started shooting it in a weekend in June of 07 at exactly a block from here at the Erie House.
Yep.
Right over.
For those that, here is Westtown in Chicago. If you don't know where that is, look up Sonotech online and we're a block away. Use Google Maps to figure out where we live.
Okay. And where we shot the movie.
Yes.
So we actually had that space for 3 days, a Saturday and Sunday, and then a following Saturday.
Okay.
We shot straight through those days.
What time did you show up? What time did you leave?
We showed up at 6 a.m. and left at midnight.
Okay. Did you have to leave at midnight?
Or
was 18 hours long enough?
Part of our payment of money that we put out of this was to bribe the janitor to let us stay a couple hours longer because we were only supposed to be there from like 6 till 10 or something.
Yeah.
Actually, one day, a group of actors, which included my wife, the cinematographer, got up at 4, went to a bar on Southport to shoot a bar scene.
You should have let me know, man. we could have done it on a Monday.
That's true. I don't know why I didn't think of that location.
Come on.
One of our actors' husband was the manager of this bar, so that worked out too.
Yeah.
But we had to do it at that time because the cinematographer was only going to be with us for 3 days, so he had to do it.
When did you find your cinematographer in this process?
Another interesting story about making independent film. We had a cinematographer who was very into making the movie. And he went along with us all the way up until about May.
Okay.
And then sort of dropped out.
Before he actually shot anything.
Before he shot anything.
Is that good or bad?
I think in the long run it was probably good.
Yeah. Why did he drop out? Could you say?
He was, I think, we never don't know for sure. It was kind of just like a unannounced dropout.
Yeah.
I think he was overwhelmed with the project. I think he was overwhelmed with the prospect of shooting.
How many locations were you in?
We were only, during those 3 days, we were only in two locations.
Okay.
I mean, around the building, we moved to different rooms and stuff.
How many, for most scenes, how many cameras were used?
Two.
So it's just only a two-camera shot for everything. Were they both mounted or no?
No, they were both handheld.
Okay. You hired a cinematographer for this.
Right.
Are you glad you did that?
Oh, I mean, neither Jessica, my wife, or I could have.
Well, Jessica couldn't have done it because she's in the.
Well, that's true.
Flick, but you're not.
I'm not.
Why didn't you want to hold the
camera? Because I don't know stuff about cameras. I don't know about light levels and sound levels and.
Did you use digital or film?
Digital.
Totally. Where did you get the cameras from?
He had them.
Nice.
So that was part of his payment, you know.
So in June you shot for 3 days at Erie House, and you shot in a bar on Southport. What else? Where else?
We shot after that randomly for about 3 weeks. We shot at our actors' actual apartments as their characters, mm-hmm. and we just shot sort of like interviews since it's a mockumentary.
Yeah. For those that don't know mockumentary, you really should, but I don't know. What's the best one besides Spinal Tap?
My favorite.
Best of show?
Mighty Wind is my favorite.
I like Mighty Wind quite a bit. Music, what's the actress? I think her name is Jane something. She plays the former Lady of the Night.
I'm not sure.
That was wonderful.
Yeah.
Go watch that film. Okay. Yeah. So you shot in May. You shot the film itself in May and June. And then what? Now you've shot in an apartments. You've shot in a Erie House and you shot in a bar. You have your raw material. Now what? What time is it?
This is September 07.
Okay.
So here we are over a year
later. What happens in that in the last 13 months?
This is where having volunteers work for you is good or bad, and I am completely in debt to our cinematographer and our editor both who helped us do this. But you know, when you have real paying work come up,
yeah,
volunteer work gets pushed aside. And with our cinematographer, he was going to be the editor and he got super swamped, and eventually he had to basically just drop out of doing the editing, so we had to find another editor. Luckily, we knew another wonderful girl who is a great editor, and she went to Columbia, Chicago. She worked commercially in New York for a while and now is back in Chicago, and she kind of took over the project, but she was working on it really hard, and then she had a job switch that went from...
When is this? When did she have the job switch?
Probably like March 08.
Okay.
So when she was kind of like right in the middle of it, and it just kind of, you know, sort of slowly skipped along from there. But now we're to a point where it's, you know...
Well, who's been editing it?
Her.
Oh, so once she was done with that job, she came back and...
Well, this is actually just a regular, like, full-time 9-to-5 job.
Oh.
She just needed to get acclimated to it. And
got it. So she's been using nights and weekends to edit your flick.
Exactly, days off, and yeah, well, yeah.
So how long... So who does the soundtrack?
That's something we're still working on. Another great thing, and when people see this movie, they will see this, but Chicago actors and Chicago comedians are so underrated. Our soundtrack is mostly being done by our actors because they have talents as musicians.
Yeah, totally.
You know, they do like comedy stuff, and a lot of them have just volunteered music that they already
had.
That's
great.
Just, you know, laying on the floor. So, and they're, you know, they're great actors and they're great people. And I mean, sadly, as with any art, you know, most of them aren't going to ever become...
Well, they might. They just have to get the hell out of here, which is a shame.
Hopefully this movie will help them.
There you go. So what's the goal for the film? When is it supposed to be done? Do you have a set date?
We are screening it at the end of January 09, so
okay,
it will be done by then.
You started this thing in December 06? Yes, in December 06.
We'll say February 07.
February 07. Did you think it would take this long? Did you think it would take upwards of 2 years? Because it doesn't sound like it's that long of a time from start to finish.
At a point, I was really frustrated that it was taking that long. I thought a year.
Yeah?
But then, as I would go along, I'd read about, and I wish I could remember this guy's name. He's from Chicago, and he's the guy that is the mumblecore pioneer. Do you know mumblecore?
Not a clue.
It's like...
Sorry.
It's okay. It's like filming with non-actors on the fly. He shoots over here at the Swim Cafe all the time. He's got a show on Independent Film Channel called...
Keep going.
Young and Naked or something, about relationships, and it's all shot in Chicago.
And he's at the Swim Cafe, which is literally around the corner.
Yeah, he shoots there a lot. He's not... His name is Joe something. God, I wish I could remember.
See, this is why I need cable sometimes.
And yeah, well, I've rented some of his movies, which you can find around here at, like, Blockbusters and stuff.
At Blockbuster? Really?
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking, like, Facets or...
I'm sure you can find them there, too, but he... it's... Gosh.
Is it any good? Whoa, was this like a whole new style of filmmaking? Like Esquire GQ wrote about it like year or two ago.
I'm sure and they did. It was sort of trendy.
Yeah. It's all DV stuff.
It's all quickly shot.
Yeah.
Supposedly non-actors or non-like, highly non-scripted. Very much like what we did, except in a more of a drama sort of way.
Okay.
Anyway, his first film that he did, I read somewhere that it took him well over 2 years to finish it. So when I read stuff like that, I'm like, I don't feel so bad.
Well, I have some awful film books for you if you want them. I just finished them. I used to want to make films when I was in junior high, and my mom bought me these film books in like 95, and like they're really, really bad because one of them is by John Pearson, who got all these films distributed. Like he got She's Gotta Have It, and found a buyer for Clerks and stuff like that. And the other guy followed these seven film students around. It's called What I Really Want to Do is Be a Director or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed like seven really angry people that weren't making it. And they saw like Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino, and they would just get really bitter.
Right.
So yeah, if you could read those and feel good about your life, at least you didn't go to New York or LA and spend not a million, but a lot of money and be really angry about it.
Yeah.
But this isn't all you do. In the meantime of that, all you wrote and finished a book.
I had actually before that I had written and finished a book, and I self-published it.
Well, this was, I'm talking about current, during the filming, you had a book that came out.
Right, that was, well, it was actually...
Yeah, your second book, not your first
book.
My second book.
And again, I guess using percentages, it was about 80% of my thesis.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was doing that at the same time, as well as running my website, AvantChicago.com.
Well, let's go back and talk about the first book. Okay. When did you put out the first book?
I wrote it in 99 and self-published it in 2001.
Okay, what's it about?
It is about a young man's desire to get out and see America post-college.
Did you do that?
I did do that.
Good. So you wrote about what you knew.
I wrote about what I knew and what I did.
Do you want to tell the story about the morning TV or no? You told me you did a spot on morning TV.
Oh, I did a spot. I did one spot on morning TV in Park City, Utah. I can't believe you remember that.
It's a funny story.
And are you talking about what I told her about the skiers or?
What you were on to promote your signing that night,
right?
And you had booked a large block of time.
Right. So here I am in Park City, Utah, and it was actually like the day before Sundance started too. So I'm thinking, it's like,
that's great.
This town's going to be hopping. I'm on TV, morning TV, drive time.
There you go.
Like, I think it was like 8 a.m. And so I get there and I do this interview, and it went well. It went fine. It wasn't any, no flubs or no reason why anybody would not want to come out that night. And I was at this coffee shop, which did a lot of book signings and regularly in Park City. And besides the barista that was working there, nobody showed up.
Yep. How long were you there for?
Like maybe three or four hours.
Jesus,
I don't even
Christ.
Remember.
Why did you stay for the whole time? After like an hour, why weren't you like, I gotta leave?
Because I was on TV and I thought people were going to come see me.
There's going to be a giant flood at the door of people.
But I was like, when everybody got in for Sundance, they were going to come over and talk to me for a while.
Didn't happen.
And I was going to sell my book to option it out to somebody.
Is that why you went to Sundance? Did you plan that out?
No, it actually worked out that my parents had gotten really big into skiing. And Sundance starts right before Martin Luther King.
In January.
So they had like a 4-day weekend, so we went out there to go skiing. You just
were like, I'll plug a book.
Exactly. And I did another TV spot in my hometown.
Your hometown being?
Elkhart, South Bend, Indiana.
You said that with such disdain.
I don't disdain it, but it's just part of my past. I love going back there. I love Indiana.
You're probably the only person that's ever said that, honestly.
Oh, I'm sure there's like three Hoosiers.
Besides Mellencamp, it's just you and him.
Yeah, Mellencamp and...
Letterman got the hell out.
Axl Rose got the hell out.
For better or worse. I kind of wish he stayed there.
Probably. Man, he'd just be rocking out at some Central Indiana bars.
So it'd be a lot better.
Scaring people. I thought Chinese Democracy was all right. We won't get into a huge...
I only heard the first track. And it was good. It was super... you could just hear the money that was spent on that album.
It was a very high production value. But
I can't think of a higher production album, other than maybe like some Celine Dion or...
Well,
something
nothing
like
else
that.
Lasted that long to make.
Yeah, that's true. Well, some of the... Smile, kind of.
Smile.
It's by Brian Wilson?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it depends on how you look at it, because Smile technically took longer. Yeah. But none of the stuff that's on the proper release of Smile from 2004 was recorded in like 68 or 67, right. So...
Yeah.
And also, he doesn't have Buckethead.
Right.
Which is really cool.
I love Buckethead.
And you would know about this because you write about music consistently on your website, Avant Chicago.
Correct.
When did you start doing that?
I started a online music magazine in like 2000, that was still when I was post-college living in Indiana. And that was just before I was well aware of like the free blogging softwares mm-hmm. that are out there. So I was actually paying someone to administer my content and all that crap, and spent like $700 and, you know.
Which is a lot of money
and when I do it now for free.
Yeah.
And
well, what made you want to do this?
I guess it's just the same kind of thing as, you know, I just creating and writing, and I like to write, and I like to, at that time I saw it as like, oh, this is like a new thing, the next thing, online magazines. And if I would have had the money and I could have made it like high quality, you know,
mm-hmm.
maybe I would be.
I don't get all regretful now.
Not regretful. I'm just was going to say there's all these other people who have made it.
Like who?
Oh, you know, like Stereo Gum or Prefix Magazine, or even, I'm trying to think of some local examples. I guess there
really
isn't too many. I
there
mean,
really
Gaper's
aren't.
Block, but that started way after
Gaper's,
2000.
Yeah. And it was 2003, and it's not about it's about Chicago, not necessarily the music
right,
scene.
Right.
So, but why music? Why not just culture in general? Do you feel like you do just do culture in general?
I do a mix.
I'd say like 2/3 of what you do is music related.
Yeah. I love music. I love talking about music. I like passing along information about music.
Well, you're not in a band.
And I don't have any musical talent at all.
Have you ever tried?
You're
the second guest in a row that has said that exact same thing.
I hope it wasn't Daniel Knox.
No,
just
no.
Kidding. I'm just joking.
Esmeralda.
He has great musical talent.
Did you see him on Sunday?
No, I did not.
You
I was
missed
back,
out.
I was back in Indiana.
He'll be at the Bottle soon. You can go see him there. Anyways,
no musical talent. I tried to do some remixing. Like I bought a
software
and I can't remember what the
a turntable.
Not a turntable, just a machine where you could do the
an actual mixer.
Yeah, a mixer.
Okay.
This was again probably back in 2001 or something, so a while ago.
So you didn't want to produce? You tried to produce, kind of.
Yeah,
didn't work
I tried
out.
To just do remixes and stuff.
You never picked up a guitar or bass or anything?
No, but I always hated those people that were playing guitar at like parties that didn't sound very good and like they were annoying everyone at the party.
Oh yeah, those people are bad. But
kind of like the guy like Animal House, I just want to pick up a guitar and smash it.
Well, why don't you do that? If you know three chords, you could be in a band.
I could be. I don't know. I'm not a.
You didn't have the desire to ever learn.
I might have had the desire to learn, but I guess even at that time younger, I was honest with myself that I didn't have the dedication to.
You seem like a very dedicated man. You've written 2 books, you've written and directed a film, you update a website pretty much daily.
Definitely daily.
So I don't think dedication is the right word here.
Maybe I just, my mental capacity to learn when I would like see people trying to learn.
Mm-hmm.
It looked very mathematical to me, and
I am a
failure at math, and I don't mean that like, I mean literally I failed like many math classes before.
Well, you're a writer, you're not
right,
a math
I'm a
guy.
Exactly. And I always felt the need to write, and I never knew that I wanted to be a writer until toward the end of college. But
yeah, and then you went to grad school, and that's how I met you.
Grad school.
Are you glad you went to grad school?
I'm glad I went to grad school, yeah.
Are you glad you went to grad school? You went for English, correct?
I actually went for cultural studies, American studies.
That's a major, or that's a graduate?
That is a major.
What does that mean?
It's sort of like anthropology.
Okay.
Like, it's just more specified.
Okay, and your thesis was about what?
It was about the development of the Chicago Blues District and all the factors that played into how that has been going and how that came about.
Did you want to write about that before you came to Chicago?
No. I didn't really have a thesis idea. It just sort of was one of those things that just came about through... It actually just started as like a, you know, what do you, those things, like a reflection paper, like
yeah.
a silly two-page thing where it was like for this class, my first year, you know, we were writing about, the class was music in Chicago, and I got writing about how blues music had sort of been like co-opted by non-natives, if you will, and then how it was sort of being packaged, sold back to those people,
mm-hmm.
and it was just a quick reflection paper on that, which eventually turned into like my desire to learn about the Blues District, Chicago blues music, politics. I mean, it's in Chicago, it's like race, music, politics, mix those three things together, and you have, I mean, I could have probably written 3 or 4 books on the subject
yeah.
if I really wanted to.
Have you read Blue Chicago?
Yes.
Fan or no? For those that don't know, Blue Chicago was also a thesis paper.
Really?
I think, it was a thesis paper, and he wrote about mostly the blues clubs around Halstead and Fullerton, which is really near DePaul.
I mean,
I wasn't the biggest fan, I'll be honest.
I don't really remember the gist of the book. Or like what it was.
The gist of the book was that the blues clubs, though they are not necessarily authentic, they are, this is what I read, they're good for the blues musicians because they will get paid a lot from
right.
the tourists.
Okay.
Where the quote-unquote authentic blues clubs on the south side, which have the exact same performers, aren't necessarily as good because they won't get paid. Which, it's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's one of those things about like co-opting and, I mean, yeah, I do remember talking about that in that music in Chicago class about how the blues musicians' set lists would be completely different at South Side and North Side clubs
yeah.
because they're playing to completely different patrons. Even if some of those South Side clubs are probably on a lot of nights predominantly white, but they're
yeah.
people that have a different appreciation for blues than people that are going to Kingston Mines
or Blues.
Or blues
Blues is literally just all caps blues. So.
It's like MGMT.
Yes, exactly. That's a great way to think of blues. It's also the place Little Walter... Was it Little Walter? Not Little Walter. Fuck, what's his name? Conan. When he was on Conan.
I remember the... I don't remember the artist,
though. Oh, he was...
T-Bone Burnett?
No, it wasn't T-Bone Burnett. T-Bone
He's
Burnett's
older.
Is white. T-Bone yes. Burnett's the producer.
Okay. You can edit that part out.
No, I'm keeping that part in. That's the important part. If I'm thinking
I
of the right guy,
who it was.
If I'm thinking of the right guy, T-Bone Burnett's like the guy that does like the Oh Brother Where Art Thou soundtrack and produced the Page and Alison Page. Not fuck. What's her name? Alison Krauss.
Alison Krauss.
Albums and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was married to. Oh crap. She's always on NPR. All Songs Considered. I'm just awful today with this with the references, and I apologize.
We both have been like the.
Which is weird because it's 2 p.m. It's like 3 in the afternoon on like a Wednesday.
Yeah.
We're not drinking.
Haven't been drinking.
I ate. I'm assuming you ate at this hour.
I did eat. I think it's too early.
Yeah, it is too early. This is awful.
Anyway, we...
Did you ever... when you realized you wanted to be a writer, did you ever fall into that lore like, oh, I need to smoke and drink and stay up all night if possible?
I'm still on that.
Well, no, you don't smoke.
I don't smoke. I never did smoke, really. I smoked... socially here and there, and I smoked, you know, in high school and stuff like that.
But do you find yourself like staying out later than you should because like you think you're a writer occasionally? I do that all the time. It's awful.
I stay out too late a lot. I don't know if it's because of being a writer, but I do definitely think that, I mean, you were talking about this with Emerson on one of your previous podcasts about how drinking is like an expense of the job of being a writer. You should be able to, you know, write it off as like, and
which is totally unhealthy. It's very and I'm going to bartend tonight, so yeah, like I'm going to do it again.
It's very unhealthy, and
but I don't see not to be mean, but I don't see you really changing that habit soon.
I don't know. That's funny. Because
to be fair, I've never seen you like fall down. Like
you should have seen me this weekend. Which was
really?
What I was going to say is that it's like I go through these periods where it's like, and I have ever since college, where it's like it gets pretty ridiculous like it did this weekend, and I'm just like, I need to cut back, and I usually do, but it usually comes back to, I mean, it wasn't like terrible, but when you're still feeling like ill 2 days later, that's not.
Well, you're getting up there, too.
That's true, and I'm getting older, and one of the things was, and I posted this, I didn't post it directly on my website, but there's a link, and if you're investigative, you can find it. There's a picture that I self took of myself at like 8 o'clock in the morning, Sunday morning, and I look like hell.
you should have one of those blingies or whatever of you, and then just have Sunday morning coming down. Sunday morning, Vegeta Cash in the background, if possible.
Yeah. So you see a picture like that, you think about, I don't know. I mean, it's just all about personal choice and moderation and all that yada 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 stuff you talked
this
about.
This is not an intervention. I'm not trying
it's
to
like
get 11th, you to do anything.
11th grade health class.
Yeah.
Go back and read the chapter on alcohol. And
if you still have that book, you know there'd be a drinking game to reading that chapter. I've been reading too much Nelson Algren recently, and like I feel like I have to compete with him.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing when I read a lot of Hemingway. It's like, well, I have to abuse women now if I want to be a good writer, which is awful.
Yeah, I mean, I was always, and when, who knows, my parents probably could never figure out how to listen to a podcast, but...
yeah, you're fine, don't worry. Also, this far into it, come on.
Yeah, my dad would be asleep.
Yeah.
Here's a joke, not a joke, a true thing. It'll be funny to all my friends and family listening, because I know my dad won't be. He fell asleep watching our movie for the first time.
Oh,
and we showed it to him.
This weekend?
Like Thanksgiving.
Oh, man,
so
I'm sorry.
Boo to my dad.
Oh, that sucks. When am I going to see the film? Am I going to have to wait till January?
Probably.
Yeah, don't blame you.
But anyway, I always fell into the thing of I am and was a huge Beat Generation fan, and my writing style is very much like theirs, and I was always, like, for lack of a better word, like a speed guy.
Yeah.
And that's not good for you.
It's interesting that you and I should not be friends because of that. Because I remember the music you like isn't necessarily the music I like at the radio station. I definitely know that, and I gave you shit for this for years.
Right.
I still do occasionally. You like the writers that I don't. I'm not a Beat Generation fan pretty much at all.
Right.
Yet we're still friends.
Yeah, well.
I just need to find some like really cool Republican friends, and then I could like, I'm trying to be diverse here.
I have a couple real cool Republican friends back home.
I find that on Facebook, if someone's like trying to add you, and like they'll be like in a McCain or a Palin group, still, like I will reject it.
Yeah,
and that's mean. I'm being mean.
I'd rather them be McCain, Palin, than like in a Bush Cheney group.
I'd rather just not have political allegiances on your Facebook page.
Facebook.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
I mean, Facebook's all about identity, so a lot of people tie their identity to politics, so...
Yeah. All right. Well, there's a lot of questions I want to ask you, but I don't think they're appropriate for this, so I'm going to end this thing with a question.
I'm ready.
From the Kids Book of Questions by Gregory Stock,
PhD. How many
PhD.
Numbers are there?
1 to 260.
1 to 260. I'm going to go with number 40 for my favorite basketball player of all time.
Which was?
From my high school, Sean Kemp.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
I love.
Sean Kemp was awesome to watch in the early 90s.
He was.
Mid 90s, I should say.
For about.
Doesn't he have like 20 kids, too?
I think he has 8 kids.
That's awesome.
And 4 of them are from the same wife, so.
I like how that's a feat now.
Well,
like, that's not the norm.
For an NBA.
Whatever. He just got caught.
And, yeah, for like 8 years, he was. He was a Hall of Famer for 8 years.
Yeah, he was the human highlight reel, man.
Changed the game of basketball.
I caddied for the president of the Seattle Supersonics in 96 when they were playing the Bulls in the finals.
Yeah,
so it was him, a Nike rep, an Adidas rep, and somebody else from the NBA.
Here,
it was in Oak Brook at the Butler Golf Course. Really nice guy.
Well, I was just gonna say, if it's this, was it the same guy that still owns him? Is he a real asshole?
I have no. He was pretty young.
Because he moved him to Oklahoma City, and now they're a.
Yeah.
Now they're called the Thunder, and they.
And it's funny.
Blow.
So you're really angry, but not at Chung. What's Chung come up to these days?
He was in Europe.
Playing?
Yeah.
And still?
Oh yeah. He got back into pretty good shape and tried out. He tried out for the Bulls like 2 years ago and didn't make it. And then he tried out for the Rockets and some other teams and didn't make it. And he was playing in Europe. I don't know if that's still the case.
I'm going to Wikipedia him.
Tried the NBDL just as, I mean, I don't think he was.
What's that? Is that like the farm league?
It's the new, fairly new, like 3 or 4 years old. Yeah, where they send younger guys and foreign guys that aren't quite ready for the.
I always thought they just send one to Europe.
Well, it's pretty new. It's only like 3 or 4 years
old. Where do they play?
Mostly, which I don't know why this is either, it's mostly mid-sized cities across the South, although the closest one there
like
is...
Like Tulsa or something like that?
Tulsa, Birmingham, maybe, I think there's a Winston-Salem.
Yeah.
There's one in Fort Wayne, though, Indiana. Okay. So that's probably the closest one. There might also be one in... There is one in South Dakota or North Dakota.
So the Dakotas have a sport now.
Well, they used to have that team, whichever it was, had the best CBA team for many years, and it kind of just switched.
No. I thought the two top CBA teams were adopted into the NBA. Or am I thinking of the ABA?
ABA.
I'm thinking of the ABA, and I learned that from Semi-Pro, which is not a good thing to admit.
The CBA was like a knockoff league of the NBA, which for a while was owned by Isaiah Thomas.
The whole CBA?
Yes.
Really? Isaiah Thomas from the west side of Chicago?
Chicago, Indiana, Hoosier player.
And he went to St. Joe's High School in Westchester, which is where I grew up. So there was always an Isaiah Thomas life-size thing, and like by eighth grade I was taller than him.
And now he's probably...
abusing the Knicks staff.
Yeah, probably.
Wasn't there... and he had that sexual assault case against him. Mm-hmm. Good for him. You know, at least he's
productive. Maybe he reads Hemingway.
Bring it all back around. All right, question 40. If people stopped growing and getting stronger by the time they reached your age, and so adults were neither bigger nor stronger than you are, would you still do what they said? If so, why? This is a really convoluted question for a child.
It's a really convoluted question for an adult.
Right, I'm going to read it again. If people stopped growing and getting stronger by the time they reached your age, and so adults were neither bigger nor stronger than you are, would you still do what they said? If so, why?
Well, I was a pretty rebellious young man, and I never listened to what adults said, so I probably still wouldn't be listening to them.
So you're exactly like Axl Rose, the favorite son of Indiana.
One of the favorite sons of Indiana. James Dean, Michael Jackson.
James Dean?
What, James Dean?
Ooh, he got the hell out.
Fairmount, Indiana has a James Dean Festival every year.
Have you gone?
No, but it's not far from Muncie, which is where Ball State is, where I went did my undergrad. No, I have no desire to go to...
What's at the James Dean Fest?
I don't know, a bunch
cars
of...
Cars crashing?
A bunch of posers that think they're James Dean 50 years later. I don't know.
That could be awesome.
It could be awesome for the comedic value in it.
Well, everything's... Yeah, pretty much.
I just envision like a bunch of ex or pretending to be like 50s greasers walking around.
Did you ever see the It's Always Sunny with when they have the gang with DeVito's gang?
No.
Oh, you gotta see it. It's great.
I haven't seen that show yet.
Oh, actually. It's wonderful.
I know.
I've heard that
a thousand times.
Well, 1,001 it is. Thank you for coming on the show. And now I want to talk to you about stuff I didn't want to talk about on the mics. I'm going to close that with Daniel Knox, who you are a big fan of.
Huge fan.
He is playing, like always, in Chicago. I think he's playing, December 20th. It's a Saturday night at the Empty Bottle. Thanks for listening. Thank you, Brent.
You're welcome.